At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to part two of our interview with Gare Allen as we continue our conversation about reincarnation.
The question I was going to have, and you kind of started to go into it, is do we have a choice in understanding or viewing a past life? And it sounds like that can be done in regression to a certain extent. I was just wondering if it's something that anyone can do, or if it's one of those things where, as that dream of the Native American and the settler and the battle there, if that is something that just kind of is given to you and comes to you, or can we choose to dig into those areas, even if we don't know what they are and have no clue and have never had a vision or a dream of it?
So, you know, they're great questions. And I do remember saying, okay, I started to have regressions and I was doing regressions on my own. And then I began dreaming. So I'm thinking, well, yeah, I mean, how many of us have watched a movie and then had a dream with the characters in the movie? You know, sure. it was fresh in our mind, you know, in our lexicon, the terminology was in there. And so your subconscious pulls from recent things, you know, to sort of send you a message or give you images. But the response I got during a channeling session was that your subconscious understands you're telling them, hey, I want to remember this life, and it will continue to bring up memories. And she actually implied that it knows which moments to show you or recall that were impactful. Now, whether or not they just resonated emotionally, or they were, you know, specific turning points, or they have a very specific message that clues you into the dynamic between you and someone in this lifetime, I wasn't sure. Mm-hmm. During these channeling sessions, you know, I have 1,000 questions, but the umbrella message here is that you got to figure it out on your own. So they sort of help you block, but you're running with the ball sort of thing.
Sure.
And you have to call the plays and all that. So I could only get, you know, so much, but through the experiences, I would then gain more information. And what I found was if I asked the right question, they were more willing to play. So if they didn't answer the question, that kind of told me I was on the wrong path. But to me, the draw for metaphysics was to better your life, right? I mean, this is sort of at 25, you know, and I was only 25, but in my mind, I was working and coming home and going to the bars in the weekend. And it was just the same thing over and over. And I'm like, all right, there's got to be more to this. I was in sort of that frame of mind.
Sure.
And, you know, I want to enhance my life and enhance the things around me, the people around me and experiences. And it seemed to me that getting to know the other side and understanding why we're here would give you a greater insight and, of course, enhance your existence. And that's how I came at it. So for me, understanding why someone's in your life or giving insight to the dynamic as to why there's good, bad relationship, whatever it is, or why, you know, there's certain things we're able to do and there's certain things we can't do, or we feel like, you know, it's being kept from us, or, you know, we're not able to achieve certain things, or we weren't given a certain talent, you know, those sort of things that, you know, we can feel like we're dealt, you know, not a great, you know, hand of cards. And that's not the case, but there's a reason why we have and don't have the things we have. And those were the answers. That's what I was looking for, was what's that about? Mm-hmm. You know, I think about someone who's, you know, a child prodigy, plays the piano at 3. I'm sorry. How did they not come into this life with that?
Yeah.
You know, it just, Sesame Street doesn't teach that. It just doesn't, you know? So they came in with some of that ability.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not so far-fetched when you look at it that way.
No, I mean, it explains some of those abnormalities that are out there where you just go, how on earth is this even possible? It's like for some, the imprint of the past life, you know, is, you know, it's almost like a coin that's being printed. Some are struck a little bit deeper than the other. And some of those, oh, well, that one's, it's kind of odd. So we're going to get rid of this one. But with people, it's almost like sometimes when they're born, they're struck with a bit more of the imprint of the past life on than others. And it's more prevalent in this life than it is for many other individuals.
You know, and it's sometimes it's literally a physical imprint.
Yeah.
So you'll see a child remember a past life where they were shot in the head and they have a birthmark on their head where they said they were shot. And so that carries over sometimes too, and those stories. And, you know, children, wow, you know, before a certain age, a lot of them, they're in touch with stuff. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I'm torn. It's not that I think we should sit every young child down and drill them about what they think about existence and things like that, because I don't want to, you know, it's a very formulative period for them as well. So we don't want to put things in their head. We have to be very careful. But when they do share things like that, and I see that or read it in the book or see the program, I definitely pay attention because it's honest. It's honest and it's real to them.
It is. And it's very oftentimes delivered in a very non-exciting way. Very just matter of fact. Hey, here's what happened. My daughter, yep, who is now 7, has no recollection of telling me this. But when she was 2, we were just standing in her room brushing her teeth. And she just puts the toothbrush down and she goes, "You know, I died in that fire." Like, what? Like, we're just watching like Dora or something. There was nothing, you know, we weren't watching Die Hard. You know, it's like we're not watching The Towering Inferno and she's, you know, making reference to, it's like, what? And immediately I'm already doing these shows, so this kind of on my mind immediately when she says something like that. I'm like, "What do you mean you died in the fire, honey?" Just like we're talking, like, "What do you mean you like ponies? You know, what do you mean you died in the fire?"
Right.
And she's like, In the spaceship, I was in the spaceship and it caught on fire and I died in it. And I burned alive and I died. These are terms that she wasn't into spaceships. She wasn't into fire. She wasn't into anything she was talking about. It was like things that were completely foreign. I don't let her just watch anything on television. You know, she's fairly controlled with what she had access to at that point in her life. And just this nonchalant, you know, and then she picks up the toothbrush and then does her back molars. Just like died in the fire, Dad. You know, spaceship burned up and
just another Tuesday.
I was trapped inside. Like, and then it's like, and I try and ask her about it every now and then at that point in time when she was 2. And she would just very nonchalantly acknowledge, "Yeah, I died in it, but, you know, I'm okay now." And it was just the most bizarre thing. And I started to kind of look into, you know, like spaceship fires and things of that nature. And there had been some, you know, where people were on the launch pad and it burned up. And I don't know. That's kind of where it ended. And then eventually, you know, she turned 3 or 4 and had no recollection of ever saying such a thing. And we kind of laugh about it now. But it was one of those moments where you go, "What the hell was that?" And it's just, it's bizarre. In fact, one of the more bizarre moments of that whole story is about a month or two after this happened, we went to a space museum in Kansas, which of all places, yes, there's a space museum in Hutchinson, Kansas. And it's where the real Apollo 13 capsule is. It's one of the most bizarre things. You're kind of in the middle of this methed out town. And then all of a sudden, here's this space museum with rockets and Apollo 13. And it's a really good museum. But also within the museum is part of a NASA capsule that some astronauts, and I forgot the mission, that they perished in on the launch pad. It caught on fire and they died. But the remnants of that pod that they were in is in this museum. And it's a NASA sanctioned museum and all that, part of the Smithsonian. And there was right there within a month, we were walking past this capsule that these astronauts had died in after she had told me that story. Things like that really make me wonder, you know, another thing when it comes to past lives, and I'm very interested in your take on this, is it always our own past life that we are recalling in situations like that? Or could it be from time to time, it's not necessarily that, it's not a past life of ours, but it's some spirit that is in the area that is using us as a vessel to communicate its message, its memory, its history. And then to us, we're essentially the record player or the CD player, or whatever you want to call it. And we're just playing the track back. So in our mind's registering it as, this is us, this is happening to us. But really, it's more like virtual reality. We're just kind of seeing it through their eyes of what someone else lived.
You know, that's a great question. In the lives that I've gone back and looked at, there was always an emotional response, and it wasn't, I wasn't viewing it. And for the longest time, I didn't know what I looked like mm-hmm. in that life. And so that told me that I was remembering it from a memory.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, to answer your question, I guess if you saw it from the outside, you know, like we often do in dreams, you know, we're a viewer of something where they're playing something back to us, you know, and so it's interesting. We'll talk about the Ouija board for a second.
Yeah.
I don't mess with those anymore. I finally, you know, left brain guy playing with a Ouija board. It didn't work to begin with, and it won't work today. So I got rid of that a long time ago. But when I did mess with it, I do remember that it would, I could tell it what to say. So it was the weirdest thing. It was like only pulling. So we'd ask it questions, but it would only pull my answers. And so I decided to ask it a question that I didn't know the answer to, and it couldn't give me an answer. And the person I'm doing it with is like, why did it stop working? And I go, do you know the answer? And they're like, no. And so I said, okay, let's ask a question that you know the answer to that I don't. It still wouldn't do it. And so then in my mind, I said, you know, type out a particular word, and it did it. And it bothered me. It kind of freaked me out because I'm like, whoa. So for whatever reason, it takes two people. There's probably, you know, some sort of energy, feed, balance, positive, negative kind of thing going on. But it was literally channeling through me and my thoughts and from my subconscious.
Mm-hmm.
I could tell it to do anything and it would spell it out. And that bothered me because if you have that kind of access, then you have that kind of control.
Sure.
And I kind of felt like a puppet.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't dig that.
That's a very interesting encounter with a Ouija board where you knew what it was going to say. I have not heard an encounter with one where that is how the outcome went.
So it told me that, number one, I wasn't really connecting to anything outside of myself, but something was able to connect through me.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had, you know, so we'll go back to the manager of the bookstore that I became friends with, and he would have one-on-one conversations with, he had a very interesting experience where he was talking to someone, I think it was in Ireland, and it was in the 1300s, and I was like, what? And he's like, going back and forth with this individual, and the individual was using not a Ouija board, and forgive me, I as far as I tell the story, I should have looked this up, but I forget what it was, but it was the equivalent of a Ouija board back then.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was using something similar. And so he was they're communicating back and forth through time through a Ouija.
How interesting.
Yeah. Wrap your head around that one for a second.
Yeah. Lots of concepts in this show that really kind of boggle the mind. Do you think there's ever a danger in using some of the modern ghost communication devices that are out there? Earlier, we had talked about cell phones. And with cell phones and with everything else comes, there's apps for that, or there's new equipment all the time that ghost hunters use to sense and to communicate with the other side. As there's always been this large stigma on Ouija boards, and for good reason, after doing thousands of episodes of our other program, Real Ghost Stories Online, I've heard my fair share of stories of shit going really wrong when they thought they were just playing with the Ouija board at the Halloween teenage ghost party. And then it turns into something that follows them the rest of their lives. But do you think that the modern tools that are out there that almost anyone can get their hands on now hold the same dangers, if you will, that sometimes we believe a Ouija board can hold as far as bringing things into our path of communication or life that otherwise wouldn't have an open door?
You know, I think that they're all tools for them to use, but I don't think the danger lies in the tool we use.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just comes down to the individual. So if you're someone whose aura or energy is low and you're open to, you know, some sort of even mild possession or, you know, an entity getting in and pushing your consciousness aside and taking control, or, you know, or you're susceptible to thought and impression, so you're so sensitive to that they can put those in your mind and make you act. I think that it falls on the person. I don't think the tools are just something for them to use, sure, but it's more the person that allows that to happen. So I don't think the tools have increased the danger. It may give them a few more things to use, but I think it's more on us. And so more people are gravitating towards being paranormal investigators or just looking into the other side, and they're not doing the research, and they're not protecting themselves, and they're not going in with a positive spirit and a positive attitude, and protecting themselves. And there's so many ways to protect yourself, but, you know, being of strong mind, body, and spirit, you know, is going to do that. So, no, I think it's more the individual that allows those things to happen. But, you know, I guess it could more happen, you know, the more tools that are out there. But for me, it's the individual. So, I mean, look at all the people that are investigating right now, and, you know, they have the right attitudes and perspectives. And so, and they're taking steps to protect themselves. And sometimes when I watch shows, you know, it kind of bothers me. I'm like, God, you know, you got to know that you're motivating other people to go do what you're doing. It's like, so, you know, we have a responsibility to say, okay, we're doing this, and we know you're going to try this at home. So remember, yeah, protect yourself. You know, go to our website. You can look up, you know, some tips there. And, you know, I've got a great friend of mine, Joni Mahan, who she actually does all my book covers, and she's a great friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a joke. Every time she goes to a haunted, you know, investigation, I'm like, who'd you bring home? And, you know, it's always a different spirit, you know. Yeah. But she has a protection in place, and she removes it. But they're like white on rice with her. You know, they know that she's open to it. They know, maybe they want to get written about because she's, you know, a prolific author. I don't know.
Yeah.
But they gravitate toward her. But she understands that that's her reality and has been for the most of her life. And she takes it very seriously, and she's very responsible with how she protects herself and handles that as it happens. So that information is super important for people.
Yeah. She's been on the show several times, always has very, very compelling stories. Is there ever a way to completely protect yourself from something out there that wants to do harm? Is there ever a really truly a foolproof way of doing that? I wonder that I guess that's my question. Or if there's some things that are out there that are just too strong, that just you need to remove yourself from the situation because there's nothing you're going to be able to do to keep this from doing what it truly wants without getting out of there.
I don't think there's a 100% foolproof way to be completely untouchable or unreachable. The reason, in my opinion, is that we're all made from the same spiritual goo, if you will. It just resonates different. It vibrates differently. But at the end of the day, it's all the same stuff. I think the more you have a higher vibration and a higher resonation of your energy, the more positive you are, the more protective you are yourself, and the stronger your energy, you know, you don't allow those things in. And I think many will give up, but, you know, there are some that won't give up. And, you know, so some of us that have very strong energy, and, you know, a demon or something sees that as food or nourishment in some way, and they want to get to it, they're going to keep going after it and going after it. They have the patience of, you know, being on the other side and no time. So why not? Or they're just desperate to get your attention. And again, nowhere else to go. So, you know, I don't think anyone's immune. And as fallible beings, we're going to let our guard down. We're going to have bad days and drop our energies. And I think there are things waiting to pounce and get in. And I know that sounds scary, but I just believe it is. It's no different than someone waiting for that day that you don't lock your front door, mm-hmm. you know, or, you know, leave your wallet on the desk when you go somewhere. I mean, there are people that look for those opportunities, and certainly there are negative spirits or demons that do the same. And that's kind of how I see the other side. I'm not trying to be pessimistic, but it's definitely real, in my opinion.
I think that's very accurate. Quite often, I think we look at the other side as being a world that is dramatically different than ours, but I think in many ways, it's just a reflection of ours. And bad people are bad people here. They're bad people on the other side as well. There's good, there's bad, and a lot of the same rules still apply.
I think everybody and everything wants to survive, mm-hmm. and your actions sort of determine whether or not you're then perceived as good or bad. And, you know, so you can say, oh, well, you know, father stole bread to feed his kid. He's a thief. Well, he's not really bad because he was feeding his kids. Well, then you have people that murder people. And, you know, whether maybe they're being motivated or are controlled by a demon, or maybe, you know, things aren't firing right, you know, in their mind, and there's some issue with their physiology or whatever, you know, there's a reason behind it, you know, so good, bad, or otherwise, but these things do happen. But if their actions bring them joy so that they want to do it again, you know, that's for us to recognize and handle. And yeah, so everything wants to do what it wants to do. And sometimes, you know, they don't take into consideration anybody else to get what they want. You know, we see it in an innocuous situation where people, you know, do what they want at work to get promoted and they don't make any friends, but they get promoted and, you know, everybody thinks they're a jerk, but, you know, they didn't really do anything crazy. They were just very headstrong and, you know, that sort of thing. But then, you know, like I said, when people are out, you know, murdering people or hurting people, that's a whole nother level. And I don't ever want to get into that head or understanding of that or why that has to occur. But I can't imagine what the metaphysical reason behind that is. And luckily, that's not something I have to deal with in this lifetime.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Gare Allen about reincarnation. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening and thank you for the support.
In the news this week, the Have I Got News For You podcast is back for another series.
Brought to you by some of the team behind the show, we'll take you through the big stories of the week when the TV show can't.
From Kemi Badenoch to Keir Starmer, Donald Trump to Nigel Farage, we'll make sure to give every story and subject the complete lack of respect it deserves.
We also cover all the sillier stories you've missed that don't make the front page and put your news knowledge to the test with our missing words round.
Listen and subscribe to In the News This Week, the Have I Got News For You podcast, wherever you get your podcasts.